This is the Saturday Night Live Friday speaker meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous held at Westgate West in San Jose, California on February 11, 2000. Our speaker is Bob M. of San Jose, California. The original recording of this meeting is kept in the SNL tape library. Please observe the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes. Please do not break the anonymity of the speakers at any other AA meeting at the public level. Thank you.
My name is Bob Manick. I'm an alcoholic.
Does anybody think it does any good to say coffee is not served during the meeting?
Why do we say that? I mean, yeah, okay, so nobody's going to get up and get coffee, right? I don't know.
I won't be offended if somebody gets up and pees or, you know, does coffee or has a smoke or whatever. Yeah, because you do it all the time. You know, it's far be it for the group to mandate manners on folks. You know, it's hard enough to do it yourself, you know, but when somebody else tells you, if you're anything like me, if somebody else tells you to do something, I am not doing it. There's no way. I mean, one way to be sure that I won't do something is tell me I have to. You know, it's at least that's the way it used to be. What I intend to do here tonight is, the easy part is convince you that I'm alcoholic. Because, you know, from some of the stories I'm going to tell you, this guy's either crazy or he's alcoholic. And that should be fairly simple. In fact, I'll start you off with a real easy one. Okay, here I am. I'm like almost 30 years old, working at this place. I'm a supervisor, right, for a little company, maybe 50 or 60 people. And we're having a party at one of the boss's house. And there's like the CEO, the CFO, the manufacturing supervisor, you know, all the bigwigs. And I'm sitting there, you know, I'm kind of new, maybe 8 months or so there. And we're sitting there. We just had a great barbecue dinner. And I pull out my bag of dope. And then, yeah, I smoke dope too. Pull out a bag of dope and twist up a reefer. And I tell him, you know, I'm trying to quit smoking. So I'm using this marijuana because it's not so bad, you know. And, you know, during the course of the evening, I have four or five. And that's not the kicker yet, though. A week after that, I was scheduled to have a month off. Cause I used to take some time off to be with my daughter. She was like 9 or 10 at the time. So I had to take a month off during the summer. I was surprised that they laid me off for that time. You know, because instead of just allowing me to go and come back, they said, you know, you're not really the kind of guy we want, so we'll lay you off. In fact, I was kind of pissed that they laid me off. You know, thinking, no, you can't do that. You know, I'm a hell of an employee. So, how many people think that is a career-enhancing move to do that? There's a couple alcoholics over here, you know, unemployed alcoholics, probably. So, for your information, that is not a good thing to do. If you're contemplating doing that at the next company party, you might think better of it, you know, think twice. Because it doesn't work out so well. And that's the kind of shit that I would do when I was using and drinking. You know, it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever, but yet I'd do it. You know, and time and time and time and time again. You know, and I wondered why things never got any better. You know, I don't know. I'll give you a little background first. I kind of jumped ahead for that one because that's so blatant. And there's so many of those stories. But to give you a little background, I grew up in Humboldt County, a couple hundred miles north of here. And, you know, during the 50s, you know, it was all June and Ward Cleaver and everything's all happy and nobody locks their doors. You know, it's great. Beautiful time. During the 60s, things changed a little bit. You know, there was always alcohol around, but drugs started to come into the picture, you know, and things changed pretty dramatically. And that area now, or even then for that matter, it's a mecca for people who are unemployed or very underemployed. You know, if you've got a disability, shit, you can live there on disability. You know, it's not that expensive. If you need a place to go where people aren't going to find you, that's a great spot, man. There's all kinds of places to hide. You know, around here you try to, you know, park underneath a bridge or, you know, pull out your sleeping bag somewhere. They roust you. Up there, fuck, nobody goes looking for you. You know, there's too many spots. You know, as long as you're off the main roads, you're fine. So, you know, there's a lot of folks in there that aren't doing anything. Well, when you introduce drugs in that, especially something as easy to grow as marijuana, people are going to grow it, man. It's going to happen. You know, think about, okay, if I grow one plant that makes it, you know, sensimilia, I get $2,000 for it. That's pretty nice. And if I grow 50, you know, you guys can do the math. You know, all I got to do is cart water around for a little while and keep other folks away from it. You know, so people are going to do that. There's a tendency to do that. So there was a lot of stuff up there, a lot of things to do. And, you know, this year I get to go back for a high school reunion, my 29th. I haven't been to one yet. And the reason I'm going back this time is to see how many people were in that drug culture like I was. Because I don't have a clue about it today. You know, I kind of slept through most of it, or was passed out through most of it. You know, it's because it's real easy, you know, if you're using and drinking like I was, not to recall. You know, I used to think there was, extenuating circumstances. Like another illustration of my alcoholism. I'm, I don't know, 26. I go to Davis for, they have a spring fling, you know, in the an Easter break. So we're out there at this party, and I didn't think to bring anything, you know, for warm weather clothes, because I was from up there, and we came down. So a guy gives me his a pair of shorts and a T-shirt, and the T-shirt says, "Here comes trouble" across it. You know, I go figure, why would I have one of those? You know, by about 2 o'clock, I'm passed out on my feet. And by 5 o'clock, or no, it was dark, I guess. This is all what they told me now. We're walking away from the area, and we get stopped by this group of guys who we had been given a hard time all day. And I have no idea I've been giving these guys a hard time. And I'm with one of my friends. And these guys tell us, you know what, you're assholes, and we want your beers. So my buddy just grabs his beer and starts knocking heads, you know. What I was told was I didn't move, didn't make a move until I'm on the ground, you know. And when I woke up, I was in the hospital being stitched up. You know, I had, I don't know, a couple on my chin and 3 or 4 on my forehead. And I had absolutely no clue what was going on. And the guy that was with me, Tim, he says, "God, it was a great time. Don't you remember, man? We were doing this and we were doing that." And he's saying he was doing this and he was doing that while I was, you know, passed out, knocked unconscious with the first blow. That's about as bad as my fighting career got. You know what I mean? I'm a drinker, not a fighter. And those two usually aren't mutually exclusive. And I guess it depends on how much you do. You know, my brain cells were pretty much shot. You guys know about how the brain cells communicate with each other, where their synapses and little electrical sparks go across? Well, mine were like fucking trying to, one hits over here and one hits over there, you know what I mean? I never thought that was going to stop. Memory? What memory? Yeah, you guys know the CRS. That's can't remember shit. That's what I figured I had for a long time. And it would have been borne out by my actions. You know, that's just the way it was. But anyway, just another illustration. You know, who needs to get that fucked up? You know, I did. Why go halfway? You know, let's just do it. If we're going to do it, do it. And that's the way it was for me. You know, as a kid growing up in that area, I spent a lot of time outside, outdoors. And it was nice some of the times. It was certainly nicer than my house. Maybe you guys had a really nice home environment, but I had an alcoholic home. You know, and for about like my first year or two of life, that was great. I don't remember shit about it. But, you know, after that, things started coming back in my memory. And I remember being by myself, you know, making a little thing in the closet. You know, here's where I'll hide and here's where I'll be all day. When I got old enough to leave the house, that's what I did. You know, I got a BB gun when I was 6, a 22 at 9, and a shotgun at 12. You know, the idea was, I'm supposed to go hunting. Okay, I get the picture, go hunting. You know? That's just the way it was supposed to be, you know? And it's so hard, I think, when people tell you you're supposed to be this way, whatever that way is, and you don't feel like you're supposed to be that way. You know, you're supposed to drink. You know, you're supposed to fight. You know, you're supposed to be a man. Hold your mud. Don't show any emotion. God, that's tough. You know, women got it dicked. Or how about this? They got it made. They may not have it dicked. They got it made. You don't have to hold your emotions. You can show it. Jeez. How fortunate can you be for that? You know, so... Yeah, that was probably a poor choice of words, wasn't it? But some do, I suppose. Anyway, I digress. The deal is, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we get to be the people that we want to be. You know, we have some choice. You know, I used to think of my life as the movie Groundhog Day. You know, how Bill Murray just keeps going through the same goddamn day over and over again. Nothing ever changes. You know, that's kind of the way it was for me. It's the same shit. Sometimes it was a longer period than a day. You know, it'd take 2 or 3 days, maybe a week to repeat. But it's the same shit over and over again. I know it's always going to be bad. You know, something's going to be taken away. If I ever get anything, it's going to be taken away. You know, it's going to end up, it ain't going to work. And it's just, you know, a circle. Down. Down. It just keeps getting worse and worse. You know, the cops are going to catch me because I'm going to be doing something wrong. You know, I don't know. In a little town, everybody knows you. So you really can't get away with shit. Of course, if I would have gotten caught for everything I did, then I really would have been in trouble. But I'll tell you some of the kinds of things, you know, that I should have been caught for and wasn't. And some of the kinds of things that I was caught for and paid a very light price. You know, it might have been different had I, you know, gotten punished the way I should have gotten punished. For example, I'm coming out of a bar at, you know, 2 a.m. New Year's morning, 77 or so. And I'm with three minors. There's a sheriff sitting in the parking lot. This is in McKinleyville. A sheriff sitting in the parking lot, or Arcata, whatever the fuck. Sheriff sitting in the parking lot watches us walk out. And the people are little. I mean, it's obvious they're not adults, okay? So we get in the car and I'm driving. I start to take off and the cops fall on me. Yeah, na 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 through the city. I pull onto the freeway on an off ramp. He doesn't like that. Sobriety test, you know, poke my eyes out and stuff. And he lets me go. So, well, thank you very much. I'll drive home. You know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, that used to happen to me a long time ago. You know, why? You'll never see that shit today. Boy, if they smell a whiff, you know, that's it. But that's the kind of stuff that used to happen to me. When I was, 14 or so, we used to go out to a place called Ruth Lake, a real redneck spot, and there was 4th of July rodeos out there. So we go out for the rodeo, and this is like a really redneck thing. And, you know, I'm 14, I'm not driving yet. So what we'd do is we'd get together and we'd steal beer from the concession stands. So two of us would walk up in front, you know, and act like we're trying to buy beer, knowing that this guy is not about to sell us anything. And one guy would go around back into the cooler and be lifting cases while we're giving this guy a hard time. But this one particular night, we got a stack of 14 cases of beer. Now, that was about this tall. You know, and here we are, 14 and 13, 15-year-old kids, three of us. None of us could drink more than a couple six-packs. What in the world are we going to do with this? Well, anyway, and we don't drive, right? So we can't really carry it away. Where are we going with this? You know, it's like the heads are, your eyes are bigger than the stomach or whatever. So this adult comes over, and he's trying to appropriate a little bit of it. Well, one of the guys gets so pissed at him, they get in a fist fight, and so the other two of us are just lounging around trying to suck down as many as we can while we're watching the fight go on. You know, that's a country weekend fun, you know? You know, you could go to the movies here, or, you know, you could watch the traffic or whatever, but or go play video games or whatever, but up there, you know, you watch the fight on the weekend. You know, because there's always one wherever you go. You know, if you look hard enough, you'll find it. And I guess you can probably find it around here if you want. Shit. Probably do it out here in the parking lot after the meeting if you want. Why not? Just don't involve me, okay? I have seen enough and been beaten to shit enough, okay? I don't need any more. That's the nice thing. One nice thing about sobriety. Now, you don't have to do it if you want. You know, I said something earlier about you can be the kind of person you want to be. One of the first things my sponsor asked me is, who do you want to be? How do you want to act? What do you want to do? What do you like to do, Bob? And I didn't know how to answer that. What the hell do I like to do? Because I'd never really thought about it. You know, it's kind of like I just did whatever was in front of me. And if something different came up, okay, I'll go do that for a while. Yeah, okay, that's kind of fun. I'll go do this for a while. I'll go do this. But what I really like. Yeah, that took a long time in sobriety to figure out. You know, because I'd never been presented with that kind of opportunity before. Shit, you can do anything you want. What a nice thing. I like doing it. That's just how I like it. I like it anything I want. You know, and here, it's true. You certainly can do anything you want. So anyway, again, I get off on stories. You guys think my mind wanders? You should have seen it when I was using. God damn. I could not hold a conversation. You know, even with myself. A year or so before I got sober, I was living in L.A. Or actually, between... Whoa, pretty cool. Thank you, God. What is it? Yes, I'm listening. Don't know what he's saying, but let's hope the power doesn't go out. Hate to see you guys have to walk home in the dark. And no dance. Don't you love these eyes? These look really cool, huh? I like the high-tech tape on it, too. Anyway... Forget where I was. Isn't that nice? You don't have to hear that story. Shit, man. Yeah. Anyway. Let me tell you the kind of things I did when I was a kid. We would like go camping, two or three or four of us, and we'd take a couple cases of beer. Well, we'd hike back, I don't know, a half an hour or so, into the spot where we're going to go camping, and all the beer would be gone. So, shit, we got to hike back in. And get some more beer. You know, we did that a couple different times. And one time, we didn't hike all the way back, right? We just, you know, fuck it, we're just going to stay. It's too long. When we went back the next day, the whole way along, we're picking up beer cans, you know, because we were kind of taught not to throw shit away. But I didn't even see you come in, Ian. Anyway, we were taught not to throw stuff, you know, on the side of the road. And yet, when we started drinking, that's the first thing we did. You know, stuff just gets tossed here and there. That's another thing about drinking, for me at least. My values and my morals change. You know, I do stuff that I wouldn't normally do, like throw garbage on the side of the road. I don't like to throw garbage on the side of the road. Never did. But yet, when I'd use and drink, I'd do it. You know, I don't like to go out with somebody else's wife, but yet when I use and drink, you know, dangerous stuff. Dangerous stuff. I remember calling one woman up. You know, after having told her, there is no way that I'm going to go out with you. Because she asked me out. She says, my husband's gone for the week. You know, come over. No, I don't do that kind of stuff. She says, then I call and she says, well, why did you call? Well, you know, I just thought we'd go play pool or something. All right. Yeah, I want to go play pool. And you know what's weird? I'm driving her car down to go play pool, and I get sideswiped by a drunk driver. Like, hey. And I didn't get it. I did not get it. You know, I went to see the guy the next day because, you know, as soon as I got sideswiped, I whipped around and tried to follow the guy. And I did follow a car, but it was not the guy. And what happened was that the guy that I was following pulled into somebody's driveway, and I pulled down back behind him. You know, I had to block him in. And then my car was sideswiped on the driver's side. I couldn't get out. So here the guy's walking up to the car. And I'm like, oh, fuck, here's another time I get beat to shit, you know? God. And luckily, he was like an innocent bystander, and he had seen the guy that did it and got the license number, you know, so I told the cops. And the cops gave me this guy's name and home address. It's like, that was interesting. So I went over there the next morning, you know, and I see the car outside, and I go up to his house, got the address, go up to the house, and I say, are you, you know, this guy? Well, were you driving, you know, this vehicle last night? Oh, no, that was my son. So he goes and gets his son, and you should have seen this guy. He was definitely one of us. You know, because he's like this, dragging up, you know, long hair and just, you know, straggly and just looking like shit, man. You know, so I try to be really mean to him. You know, how it's really cool to be mean to somebody when they're, you know, feeling really bad with a hangover like that. And man, you smashed my car. I wanted to tell him my wife was pregnant, you know, and he really fucked her up. You know, this wasn't my wife, you know what I mean? So I can't do much. So all that said was, you know, you're going to hear from the insurance company and all this stuff. But that's the kind of stuff, you know, that I don't have to do anymore. God, what a relief. Not that I can't get sideswiped, but at least if I get sideswiped, I won't be with somebody else's wife. You know, this is nice. You know, you guys know the story of the guy that finds the money from some bank heist and turns it back in, and they want to put his name in the paper, and he's, no, you can't do that because it's not my wife that's with me. Same kind of thing here, you know. I won't tell you the rest of that story. You guys don't want to know. Boy, it sure flashed through my mind, though. I was sitting at work today, and one of the long-timers is leaving. And I didn't know her. I'd just been at this place for 5 or 6 months. But one of the long-timers is leaving, and they want to do like a celebrity roast for her because she's been there, like I say, a long time. So what happens with long-timers. They've been in something a long time. They want to do this roast. So they're asking everybody, do you know any stories about this person? And one person sitting across the table from me just cracked up, turned red, and just cracked up laughing. And it's like, yeah, okay, come on, tell me the story. She couldn't tell it. Couldn't tell it. And that's the kind of thing that I was thinking about the rest of that story with the woman. And John, I'll tell you later. Good story. And I think we all have some of those. Actually, that appeared on my 4-step. You know, so it's nice that, you know, we have an outlet for that kind of stuff, but it doesn't have to be, you know, from the lectern. This is a lectern, by the way. The podium's the thing you stand on. It doesn't have to be from the lectern. You know, it's really nice to have discretion. You know, if you guys don't know what that is, come see me. We got a dictionary down here. We'll look it up together. And some of the other stuff that I want to show you, illustrate to you tonight, not only that I'm alcoholic, you probably get that idea so far, but that I'm not drinking anymore. You know, that's a little harder to illustrate for you. But for those of you that have been around for a little while, I've been coming to this meeting for a little over 15 years. Not this particular meeting, because we haven't been here next to the huddle. But I've been coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, and mostly Saturday Night Live, for a little over 15 years. And there's other folks that have been in here for maybe 6 months, maybe a year, maybe 5 years, whatever. If you look at each of them and say, okay, you've been here for 2 or 3 days and you haven't drank, okay. Has that manic guy been here for that long? Yeah, okay. You'll get an idea that it's really true. And if you stick around for a while, you'll see me hanging there. Smell my breath sometime. I'm chewing mint, so it's okay. You know. But it's true. Lots of people stay here for significant amounts of time, and they don't drink, and they don't take drugs. What a weird thing. Who would want to not drink or take drugs? Jesus Christ. You know, the way I grew up, I can remember the first time that I worked hard to get drunk. I mean, for a few times before, you know, I had gotten loaded, but just kind of out of hand, not really work at it. But I think I was in fourth grade, and a friend of mine and I wanted to sleep outside at night, and we had this little trailer, so we took our sleeping bags out there. And we mixed, you know, whatever was in the house. And I got so smashed, and I was a puker. I don't know if there's any other pukers in here, but I used to be able to throw up just like, you know. And my problem was I wouldn't open my mouth fast enough. So. So I don't have to complete it, right? You know what happens there? Someone else had that problem. Because if you've never had, like, a Red Mountain through the nose, you have missed out. You know what I mean? Because that's an experience not to be missed. You know, it burns like a son of a gun. And talk about humiliating, you know, because that stain is really nasty. Cause you can't... Okay, that's enough, right? Okay. I was just talking about discretion, too. Where the hell did that go? Come on. I don't know what happened. Sometimes, you know, I just lose myself. So, where was I? Oh, yeah. I was a kid. And until I was like 2, I was like a really good kid. Really good kid. You know? I was. Man. But, you know, after that, you know, I'd come out and be really cute, like in my pajamas with sleepers, and they even gave me a little flap in the back. You know, if you play that cute as a kid, you can get almost anything. Almost anything. You know, when we used to run out of chocolate syrup, we'd use Kahlua or cream de mint or cream de coco or whatever is, you know, liqueur is in there. And damn, that was good. You know, I developed a taste for that. You know, and after a while, it's like, who cares if there's any ice cream? Let me have some of this, you know? Because I don't care. You know, I'd like some of that. You know, because it tastes different, you know, than the chocolate syrup. You know, it's got that little zing to it. You know, and you zing for a while, and you know, wow, this is good. This is really good. You know, and I don't know, that's just the way it was for me. And like I say, well, I won't go back into the staying outside, but we used to do a lot of camping stuff. And camping stuff and drinking stuff and using stuff was, you know, the way to do it. And I learned after, I don't know, I was 12 or 14, that carrying beer is just too damned heavy on a camp out. You know, you get a case of beer, it hardly lasts till you get there. So you got to do something else. And what's really light and compact? You know, whiskey is, that works. But you know what? We used to steal whiskey, too, and different kinds. You know that scam we ran on the guys at the, what was it? See? Thank you. See how my mind goes? It's still not okay, all right? But we used to run that at Safeways and local stores. You know, one or two kids would go in and look like they're stealing something, while the other kids go in and hit really fast and boogie. And then the kids that look like they're stealing something put it all back and go off and meet the first guy. So I know none of you ever did any of that stuff. But I hate making those amends. So I don't do that anymore, okay? But anyway, that's what we used to do. And one time we stole some whiskey. We were into flavored brandies. One time we stole some whiskey and some gin. You know, and I trashed the gin, the pint of gin. And little did I know that would be my favorite drink. You know, Tanqueray's and tonics. And just Tanqueray's for that matter. But what nasty tasting shit. You know how long it takes to develop a taste for gin or whiskey for that matter? God, it takes a long time. Because that stuff is bad. That is really bad. But, you know, if you start on the easier stuff like the brandies. So if you're just getting started drinking, and probably nobody in here is that class, start on brandy. That worked for me. So anyway, we do that kind of stuff. And like I say, the whiskey, the gin, it goes out. You know, that was, I don't know, what was it, eighth grade, I guess. So it's at 12 years old or so. So the whiskey and the gin were out. Brandy was in. A Boone's Farm, that was great. But it just takes too much to get loaded at Boone's Farm, you know what I mean? Because a couple quarts of that, or what were they, half quarts? Pints? That's probably what they were, just little things. I can remember when I first started using drugs, I used to sell dope in matchboxes. You guys ever buy a matchbox of grass? That was a long time ago. But that's the way it was. And then, we don't need to get into that. What I'd like to tell you is I don't do that anymore. And there's a reason why I don't do that anymore. Well, a couple reasons why I don't do that anymore. I get in trouble when I do that. God, do I get in trouble when I do that. There's no way for me to control how much I do. You know, I don't know how you guys did it, but you know what? I used to have what I considered a full life. You know, I'd try to go to work, and a lot of times I'd make it. But what's really important is I can't allow myself to come all the way down. You know, I got to have a buzz going. You know, I got to have a buzz going. And if you're anything like I was, it's hard to keep that buzz going when you got other stuff going on. I mean, if you were dedicated alcoholic and that's all you got to do, that's probably not so bad. Except, how do you get the money to do it? You know, thievery is really hard to maintain. I mean, if you do it just as a sideline like I did, that's not so bad. But if you're doing it for a living, that's a bitch. Yeah, that's a bitch. I had a place to live, and that was another thing about my alcoholism. I would always find a place to live, excuse me, and it wouldn't be on my nickel. You know, whether it's a relative or a girlfriend or a friend of a friend or anywhere to go that didn't cost me anything. Because, you know, I had other things to spend my money on. And if you ask me, I just didn't make any. You know, I was broke. I'm sorry. It's the circumstances. You know, you can't fault me for what God has put in my way. You know, and that's the way I look at it. Like, it's really not my fault. But, you know, the funny thing happened. You know how I told you about the movie Groundhog Day? What Bill Murray did in that thing, in that movie, was that he changed. You know, he started doing stuff. You know, he was nice to people. You know, and he went through the same kind of shit I did. You know, he stole the groundhog one day and, you know, committed suicide, you know, double suicide with him. You know, and what the hell, he jumped in front of a truck, you know, just stood like this, jumped off a bell tower. He'd been stabbed and blown up and killed in a number of different ways. You know, and he can't die. And that's kind of the way I felt, you know. I had so many auto accidents and near auto accidents and beatings and should have been overdoses. It's shit, I can't die. So I can do anything. I'm invincible. I'm immortal. You know, that's the way I started to think about it. It wouldn't matter what's happening. So, you know, why not? You know, so Bill Murray would do shit just to get into jail. You know, just to test it. And I kind of did the same thing. You know, I'd do things just to test it. See how far I can go. You know, what's the next limit? You know, was this any fun? Try that. You know, stand like that and let me do it. You know, for me, that got to be boring. You know, how do you do something new? Where's the adventure? You know, and it's tough to keep thinking of new things. I mean, I've already done that. Let's try something else. What I didn't know was the way to feel best is not to put anything in my body. And that seems so bass ackwards. You know, because I had been working for such a long time to put something in to feel better that the realization that the real way to feel better is not to put anything in, boy, that's a stretch. So, I didn't come to that conclusion by myself, I'll let you know. As you know how hard it is for me to even think of the word rodeo, or rodeo if you prefer. It's difficult, I think, when most of us get here, to form a cohesive thought. Just one. It's really rough. In my case, I was 6 months sober before I had a feeling, you know, and I had to call my sponsor. You know, and I'll tell you about this. When I was at work, and I had to call for some technical direction on a project I was doing. I didn't know how this part worked. And God knows I knew how very few parts worked. But the one thing I did do while I was using and drinking, I went to a lot of school, and I did the same kind of work over and over and over again. So I kind of remembered some of it, if you can believe that. just very little bit. But anyway, this day I had to call this guy, or this company, to find out how this part worked. And I call the company, and I happen to get the president. And I can tell he's on a speakerphone, and there's this little click and a rubbing kind of sound, and then a mechanical thing. And I didn't realize for a couple minutes that he was putting in his office. So I've got this executive who's talking to me on the speakerphone that's doing the putt, and he's got that automatic putt return thing. Right? So I immediately became really intimidated. You know, and I felt less than. Because, you know, this guy must be really important if he can putt in his fucking office. You know, I can't putt in my office, so he must be, you know, really smart and highly paid. But what my sponsor pointed out to me was he didn't have a clue what I was talking about. He may be president of the company, but he doesn't know how the shit works. You know, he just pushes paper and he stands up. He's a figurehead. Don't I look nice? So that was a real illustration for me. You know, not everybody that's got a big high job knows everything. You know, because this guy wasn't even on my level, and I was a 6 month sober alcoholic. So how good is he? You know, I actually knew more than somebody that I was feeling less than. But it took my sponsor to point that out. You know, and I think if we able to go back to our sponsors and ask, sometimes we'll find that when we're feeling less than, there's really not a basis for it. You know, we're just as good as anybody else. Yeah, you know, maybe there is a basis. Maybe you are less than, but not me. I'm okay. You know, that's possible. You know, if there's an average, somebody has to be above average, and somebody has to be below average. Anybody ever heard the theory that most alcoholics are smarter than average?
Yes.
Anybody think an alcoholic, you know, came up with that theory?
Yeah.
Could be. You know, I work with some folks that aren't alcoholic. And, you know, some of them are really intelligent. Like, they can remember shit from one day to the next that they've only heard one time. You know, I'll be sitting in a meeting and a new concept will come up. You know, and they'll explain it, whoever's doing the presentation. And boy, like 10 seconds later, I've forgotten. I don't know shit. If I didn't take notes, I wouldn't know anything. But, you know, these other folks, they'll take some notes about some stuff, but next day they'll come back and they'll say, well, you know what we heard yesterday or last week or last month was it works like this. And you go, holy shit. These guys aren't even looking at their notes. You know, they've actually assimilated information that they've heard. I don't know if you guys can do that. I can do that like on the Comedy Channel sometimes or Disney. I mean, you know, I remember what Bill Murray did, for God's sakes. Why that? You know, I remember stuff back from June and Ward Cleaver. You know, where's the disconnect? You know, I remember a little Beaver. Hey, Beaver! Little buddy! That wasn't Beaver. You guys all know who that was. I mean, isn't that stupid? Silly. How we can remember some things and not others. Now, how do we get trained that way? Doesn't make any difference. So that's not what I'm talking about tonight. What I'm talking about tonight... Yeah, thanks for reminding me. No, what I'm talking about tonight is I'm not using and drinking anymore. That's the point I want to make. Yeah, that's the ticket. I am alcoholic, and I'm not doing it anymore. And the third thing I wanted to illustrate for you, and it's probably too early to get into this because I know you're really enjoying this, but the third thing I wanted to illustrate for you is why I'm not using and drinking anymore. You know, and the reason is it's better not using and drinking. You know, in so many ways, and I can't go through all the ways, you know. How do I feel better? Let me count the ways. The nicest thing, I think, is being able to remember that I forgot something. Because it's really bad when, like, you don't know you forgot, where you got to start all over again. At least if you know you forgot something, you can say, okay, now, there's a piece missing here. You guys ever do jigsaw puzzles? And there's a key piece missing and you can't put this son of a bitch together. Because, you know, that corner piece or whatever it is just is not there. You get everything else going around, but you just can't progress. That's the kind of way that my thought patterns go. I need to know that piece is missing before I can even go look for it. And it's the same thing, you know, with thinking about what is this idea I need to grasp? What's the concept? You know, if I don't have the whole concept, I need to know what pieces are missing so I can fill in the blanks. You know, and God knows when I was using and drinking, there were a lot of blanks. There are some blanks today, but it's certainly not as bad as it was, let me tell you. God. It's really nice that I didn't grow up here because nobody knows me as a kid. All that shit that I did, you don't know unless I tell you. You know, and some of the stuff I tell you, some I don't. You know, because none of your damn business. And some of it's really embarrassing. You know, you guys all had little stories when you were kids about stuff you did that was like, and you're all thinking about it now. Cool. I can see their faces like, oh, shit, man. Yeah. But I think we all did that. And it's not a big deal, you know, because everybody does do that. But when you grow up with people and you're around them all the time and you're around them when you're adults, you know, sometimes it's hard for me to get out of that persona. You know, it's like when I go back to Humboldt, sometimes I feel like that little kid I was before. You know, I went back, it must be 11 years ago now, and it was a rainy, kind of like tonight, or a really rainy night, and I was trying to relive a little bit of my past, you know. When I was little, I played in the park a lot. So I'd go down to the park store when I had a couple of Coke bottles, and I'd get one of those 50-50 popsicles, you know, the orange ones with vanilla stuff inside. I really like those. So I decided on this rainy night, I'm going to go back to this place and get one of these 50-50 popsicles. So I go in and I get one. And as I go to the counter to pay for it, you know, I look across the counter, and there's a guy that I went to grammar school with. And I went to high school with him, too, but I didn't associate with him after about fifth or sixth grade or so. Or I guess eighth grade. And, you know, he's really disheveled and looking like shit and, you know, just barely drug in. And he's got one can of Dr. Ross All Meat dog food. And it's like, you know, it's 19 cents because he's in front of me. There's only one clerk. And, you know, and I look up and I, Rex, how you doing? He didn't recognize me, didn't have a clue, couldn't talk very much. And at that moment, I knew that he did not have a dog.
Not a happy thought, is it?
I mean, the best he can do is the Dr. Ross. Of course, it's doggone good, so, you know. But what got me about... where does that stuff come from? You know what I'm saying about knowing this and not knowing the other shit? Most of you remember that. Woof, right? Doggone good woof. But what really got me about that was, why aren't I in that same position? What happened? You know, what's the change? Because it would have been really easy. When we were youngsters, we did the same kind of shit. You know, we drank the same way. We used the same way. We did the same kind of stuff. We stole and we lied and cheated and pillaged and all kinds of stuff. Never raped, come to think of it. But, you know, we did all that kind of bad stuff. We were bad guys. You know, we hung together. And here's this guy getting his dinner for 19 cents. You know, I became real grateful then. You know, real grateful. I didn't take him out to dinner. But I was real grateful. You know, because we had history going back. You know, and that was where I forgave him. You know, it was that night when... God, I don't even recall how old I was, or we were, but my mom had a business, and we all used to steal from the business. You know, a family business. You got to do something to, you know, make your way. So we'd all do that. So one particular afternoon, we're counting up the receipts, and it was a especially large weekend. It was, you know, my mom had a flower shop, so there's a couple funerals, and there was an event like Mother's Day or Valentine's Day, whatever it was. And lots of money comes into the store, lots of cash. So I'm counting up the cash. And there was like, you know, $2,800 or so. So I skimmed off a couple hundred. And this guy that I saw buying the Dr. Ross talked me into hiding it, you know, outside. So, of course, when I go back a day later, oh, it's not there. Son of a gun. I must have lost it. Oh, where to go? So I know this guy took it because he had all kinds of stuff after that. And for a long time, I thought, what a dog. You know, I'd never do something like that to my friends. Shit. You know, then I look at him across the counter, you know. It's rough. You know, no. Woo! Thank you very much. You know, I didn't think, serves you right, you bastard. You know, that's my using and drinking, is serves you right, you bastard. But, a little compassion, I thought, was in order, because it was a rough time for him. Rough time for him. knock it off. You guys are too much. No, I don't know if anybody in here has had to do that. I would bet somebody would, but don't raise your hand because I don't want to know. But it's pretty bad when that's the best you can do. It's pretty damn bad, especially in an area like that. You know, because there's food all over. You know, there's stuff to eat. It's just hard to go out and get it when it's raining. So what I'm here to tell you tonight is I am alcoholic, and I don't drink anymore. And the reason I don't drink anymore is because I don't have to eat fucking Dr. Ross dog food, okay? Among other things. You know, life changed for me when I got sober. But it changed so gradually, so subtly, that I didn't notice it. It took someone else to point it out to me that things were changing, that things were getting better. You know, and over time, you know, looking back, oh yeah, okay, things have changed big time. But when I'm in it, I don't see it. Just like when I'm in the shit, I don't see it slowly getting worse. You know, the little misdemeanors turn into the felonies, You know, and the felonies turn into, shit, I got caught for this one. You know, and that cycle of going to jails and, you know, getting picked up and being on probation and, you know, all that stuff, it just gets worse and worse. And the corollary to that in sobriety is the stuff just keeps getting better and better. The little things, gee, I haven't been arrested for a long time. Gee, I haven't run out of gas on the freeway. You know, I haven't had to call somebody in the middle of the night to come get me out of jail. You know, all the things that I don't have to do, I haven't had to call 15 people to find one that would come and pick me up out of jail. You know, it's like, oh, man, I can't tonight. The old lady says I can't go out. Or, you know the excuses that you used to get? These days, if I need something, and I very seldom do, there are people that I can call that would get up out of bed at 2 a.m. and give me a hand. You know, because, A, they know that I'm not going to do it if I don't really need it, and, B, I'd do the same for them. You know, for a guy like me to have friends, just period, friends, where I don't have to pay them or do something, you know, or be obligated somehow, that's an amazing thing. Just absolutely amazing. And I do have very good friends in sobriety. And I don't think that I will ever cease to be amazed at that, the changes that can come over a person. You know, like I said, when I first got sober, I didn't notice any of that. And what it took was a sponsor. And what it also took was persistence. You know, because if I can't see it going on, why would I stay sober? Gee, nothing's changing. You know, it's not getting better. Even though I'm not going to jail and I'm at work for a long time, you know, like every day for a couple of weeks in a row. That was a big thing for me. Before I got sober, I changed jobs, sometimes at my own discretion, sometimes not, a couple times a year. You know, and now I've been at the same company, except for how it's been acquired, for over 16 years. You know, who the hell does that? Very few people around here. Very few people in high tech around here, certainly. But, you know, why not? You know, a number of years ago, somebody told me, when I was thinking about changing jobs, she was talking about changing jobs because you're running away from something. And what she said was, when you're free to stay, you're free to go. And I had to think about that. You know, because so many times I had left because there was some kind of animosity in the workplace. You know, I was pissed at them, they were pissed at me, I did something that I didn't want to stand up to. You know, there was some kind of something going on. I said, ah, just screw it, man, I'll leave and go somewhere else. Or they pissed me off, they took too much money out of my check for taxes, you know, they'll just have to learn how to get along without me. Yeah, it's like, big fucking deal, man, like they care. It's like those guys in L.A. that laid me off. Yeah, I'm sure. Well, they're still in business today. That might be one of the reasons. You know, it makes a real difference in my life when I can show up and suit up, or maybe the other way around, suit up and show up. If I suit up after I get to work, let's see, which way do I do it? If I can do both of those things in the appropriate order, and then pay attention. You know, it's amazing what I can do when I pay attention. You know, about 1990 or so, I had a talk with my director, and he was saying, you know, things are kind of in turmoil here, as if any job in the Valley is ever not in turmoil. Things are kind of in turmoil here, and the people that are going to stay around are the ones that have an education. Now, I had been trying to go to school, like, all of my life. I think I've been to 13 different junior colleges in California, and one in Virginia and a university in Virginia. But I've been to all these junior colleges and never had an associate degree. Right? I had 126 units, and it only takes 60 units to get an associate degree. So I had more than double the amount for a degree. And one of the things I learned in sobriety is in order to get the degree, you have to take a curriculum that results in a degree. So you're like, a couple classes in a row that are like all in the same topic, that helps. Some of my early schooling was just general education, and I can recall taking a class called Marriage and Family at the College of the Redwoods, And I got an F in marriage and family. And I it never dawned on me, you know, that I deserved that. And I truly did. I truly did. But anyway, I had 126 units. And here in sobriety, here's this guy telling me that the guys that are going to stay in this company are the guys that got education. So I thought, you know, why don't I go get an education? I mean, I don't really know how to do it, but the company will pay for it. Why shouldn't I do it? You know, so I spent 7 years getting a couple degrees. And, you know, people now think I know something at work. And all I know is, like, when you go to class, you're supposed to pay attention. Before you go to class, you're supposed to read the part of the book that they said they wanted to talk about that day. Because, you know what's weird? I found out in sobriety, they tell you before you go to class what part they're going to talk about next week. So you can, like, crib for it. You know, you can read that part and you can already know what they're going to say. So when you do that, it's, like, not so hard to remember. And I'd have to read it 4 or 5 times. One of the things my first sponsor did to me was, in very early sobriety, he'd make me read the big book aloud to him while he's preparing dinner for his kids. You know, so I'd be reading the big book aloud, and he'd ask me, what did that sentence mean? Or, you know, that word that you just read, what does it mean? And I'd have to look him up in the dictionary. Right, so I couldn't remember what it was. So I'd read another sentence or another paragraph, and he'd say, you know, that word you just looked up, what did it mean? And I know you can hardly believe this, but I wouldn't remember what it meant. So I'd have to look it up again and go back to that point. It took me a long time to read through the big book that way. You know, but that's the same kind of study habit that I used in school. You know, it's like, what did that sentence mean? Oh, shit, I don't know. Well, I better read it again. You know, because that kind of stuff, I didn't know what he was teaching me. He's teaching me how to learn. You know, and that's something that's an ancillary benefit. You're not supposed to get that here. That's not one of the promises. That's not one of the steps that you're going to learn how to learn. But, you know, some people learn how to read here. So if that's all they get, if that's all I get, I'm overpaid. But what I'm telling you about is the change. You know, because being able to learn, I didn't think I could do that. Some of you might not think I can, but it's true. You know, if I can do it, anybody in the goddamn world can do it. You know, I had to take trigonometry, 3 separate times to get a D to pass. Okay? So I'm not a rocket scientist, but you know what? I can design the hell out of systems. You know, it's specialized. Just do this little thing. That's all I have to do is this little thing. I don't have to do the whole spectrum. I do this piece. You know, and after I learn this piece, then I start on this piece. You know, once I have this one down, you know, it takes me longer. But, shit, I can walk a long distance just by taking one step at a time. And it's the same thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we can complete the whole 12 steps if we take them one at a time. And maybe what we need is a sponsor. Maybe we need somebody to help us through there. You know, to point out to us, you know, it is getting better. Or write a goddamn gratitude list. See if you got anything to be grateful for. You know? Because most of us, if we've been in Alcoholics Anonymous for a while, really have something to be grateful for. I certainly know I do. You know, last week I was able to have dinner with my daughter and her husband and her 2 children. And for those of you that can't figure that out really quick, those are my grandchildren. You know, and I know. Some of you are like me. You smoke dope too. You know, and you know, those little neurotransmitters sometimes just don't match up. You can't get that thing across the synapse. So anyway, we're sitting there having dinner, and the older one leans over to me and, like, whispers in my ear, "I love you, Grandpa," and gives me a little kiss on the cheek. You know, how much is that worth? You know, that's worth a lot. That's worth an awful lot. You know, there's no way for me to tell if that wouldn't have happened if I would have not got sober. But I really like that. So I think that my being sober helps. You know, I know it helps with my job. I'm sure it helps with my personal life. I'm sure it helps with the way I feel inside. You know, I don't feel less than anymore. I can stand up here for an hour and talk, just bullshit, blah, 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 as you all know. it's not a nervous thing. You know, I'm not trying to impress you. You know, I'm not trying to make any point except that I am an alcoholic. I don't drink or use anymore. And I like it that way. I think it's better for me. You know, I don't know if you've noticed, but I've said that a couple different times. For those of you that are just like me, that don't get it the first time. You know, because some of us are kind of hard to learning. You know, we hear just fine, but it goes in one ear and just right out the other. That's the way I had to do it. You know, when I first got sober, like I was saying, reading that damn big book, I got a little resentful at this guy. You know, when he showed up on my fourth step, and it was really hard to tell him about it in the fifth step. You know, because you're not paying goddamn attention to me, and I'm sitting here reading this big book, and you're in there cooking dinner, and you just pick up a random word here and there and tell me to look the damn thing up, and you know I don't know what it means. You know, you're just dicking with me. You know? I don't like to be dicked with. Knock it off, you know? And he was not a nice man. You know, so he would have me do it some more. You know, so what I didn't know was that he was really helping me. And I think that's what most sponsors do in here, is they really help us. But many times we don't know that what they're doing. We just don't get it yet. And I think that's the key with sticking around. We start to get it. You know, today I've got a sponsor that I know helps me. And I go to him when I have a problem, when I don't understand something. You know, I tried to have a relationship a couple years ago. Yeah, remember I told you I got an F in marriage and family? Well, shit, I still was getting F's in marriage and family. But I was trying to do this relationship thing, and I just didn't understand it at all. So we worked through the steps. And, you know, after doing that a couple times and talking to other folks, and, gee, it started to make a little bit of sense. Yeah, maybe it's okay. Hey, you know what? Maybe I can do something different. Maybe I can change my attitude. You know, and that was a real key for me. And it's not just in relationships either. You know, it's in whatever I do. Because 98% of the time, it's my attitude that sucks. You know, it's my attitude that makes the difference. You know, I hear people talk about having bad days. You know, I've been in situations where at one moment, it'll be really terrible. And the next moment, it'll be really good. Or I'll be really looking forward to something. An illustration, one more, and I'll sit down really quickly before this ceiling tile comes down. Everybody look. Okay, thank you. I was in the service in Fairbanks, Alaska, and I had gotten a Dear John letter from my wife. You know, she's leaving me, boo-hoo. And I wanted so much to go back home and try to stop that. Thank God I couldn't do that. But I wanted so much to go home and stop that, that I applied for a discharge. And you know, it's taken months and months and months. Finally, the discharge went through. And I was just about getting ready to leave, right? It was my day to leave, and I couldn't face it. I couldn't go home because I did not want to go back and see that she didn't want to be with me. So I stayed there after I had separated from the service, stayed in the barracks for 2 days just because I couldn't face what was going on. So I was looking so forward to going home, but then when faced with that reality, I couldn't face it. So I had to stay. You know, so things could be really good, and then some situation changes. Now it's really bad. Like, I really, really want to get the hell out of Alaska. Oh, wait a minute. It's not as bad as going back and facing that. You know, I don't want to see. So what I found in sobriety is, you know, facing the reality is a lot better in the long run. And if I don't fuck up so bad in the beginning, it's not so bad to clean up. You know, the deeper hole that I dig, the further I got to crawl out. So it's a whole lot easier not to dig it so darn deep in the first place. So I'll shut up. Thank you very much for sitting so quietly and not peeing. Thank you.